This is a Glass Box Media Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to This Week in Travel, the show that talks to some of the most interesting and notable travelers in the world, as well as providing useful tips and actionable information. Now, here are your hosts, Gary Arndt, Chris Christensen, and Jen Leo. Oh, and remember, it's This Week in Travel, not Every Week in Travel.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another live edition of This Week in Travel. This week, the gang is all here. We are all in the same spot, and we are in beautiful Billings, Montana, on the right side of the tracks, quite literally. If at any point during this broadcast there may be a train that goes by, because we are like 20 feet from a train track, so that might happen. Let's do the introductions. With us, as always, the man with the golden throat, Chris Christensen. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing well, Gary.
Excellent. And I want to say our setup here is amazing. This is like the best.
And why do we have such a wonderful setup here, Gary?
Because of our first guest who we'll be getting to shortly. with us always, not always with us when we do a live show, the wonderful, delightful Jen Leo.
Hey, everybody. I am thrilled to be back at T-Bex and also back doing a live show with you guys.
Have you been to Montana before?
I have. I've been to West Yellowstone area just a couple years ago.
So just a few miles into Montana.
Yeah. I've been to Bozeman. I've been to Livingston to visit with Tim Cahill. I've been all over.
And with us, the Ringo Starr of the Fab Four, Mr. Spud Hilton. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. And just for the record, I've only been to Hannah, Montana, not any other part. So this is all new to me.
You know there's talk of bringing back Hannah, Montana?
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. With the same, not with Miley Cyrus.
No, with Miley Cyrus, but she's older.
And naked.
Don't know about that.
Okay.
Don't know what channel it's going to be on, but there was like rumors of it happening.
Okay.
So.
That's stunning.
So what we do on a live show, it's not a normal show. We don't go through news. We don't necessarily do picks of the week. What we do is we cycle through a large number of the people who are here at T-Bex, people who have attended, people who have discussed, some people in the industry, people that we're really interested in. And we're going to start it out, the man who helped us with the engineer. We can call him the official engineer of This Week in Travel now, the audio engineer.
I'm afraid to...
What?
I don't think I can carry that responsibility on my shoulders.
Palebo from Denver. Denmark, from Copenhagen?
No. Just Denmark. Randos.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Podcaster, introduce yourself and tell everyone about what you do.
Well, I'm a radio guy. I've been doing radio forever. And for the last 3 years, I've been traveling full-time as a digital nomad and still producing radio and podcasts. I do my own travel podcast called The Radio Vagabond, but also podcast for clients.
Right.
I can mention that I'm about to do another podcast for Lego, but that's about what I can say. But I can tell you that last year, since I saw you the last time, I've done 2 seasons of the Lego Technique podcast about the Bugatti Chiron that I hosted and produced myself. So that was a lot of fun.
And in English, not in Danish.
In English, yes.
Yeah.
People are crazy about Legos. I mean, there is a community of Lego fanatics.
Oh,
that
totally.
I've glimpsed and witnessed.
And you're talking about adults. You're not talking just about kids. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Not a box of Legos, but, you know, buying the sets
and
putting it together.
They come up with ideas for them to do as well. So it's really an interesting community.
You've been doing this now for 3 years as a digital nomad. Where are some of the places that you've been and recorded from?
Oh, I've done a lot in Asia, including North Korea. I've done...
They let you record in North Korea?
Well, not with all this gear.
Oh.
No, I didn't. I left my microphones in China and then recorded everything on my iPhone. But I did an episode.
Could you just use the microphones that are already in your hotel room?
Good one. It was just even without microphones attached to my iPhone, it was only on my iPhone.
Pal, I've got to ask, is your Lego podcast kid-friendly?
Since it's Lego, it has to be kids friendly, but it's not for kids. It's
going to be F-bombs every 5 seconds.
You know what? I just have to ask because I've got a 10-year-old Lego fanatic.
He can absolutely listen to it.
She can. And I must say that she really enjoys Legos, and not only that, but she saved up to buy her Christmas present last year.
Oh.
This might make me a bad parent, but she wanted a $300+ Lego Ninjago city set.
Okay.
And I told her that was more than her normal Christmas presents.
Uh-huh.
So she saved and raised and earned half the money and was proud to walk onto the Legoland California campus to help buy her Christmas
what is
present.
That? The what city?
Lego Ninjago City. It's several stories high. It has a sushi bar, an ATM.
You won't understand, Gary.
No, I don't. I want to, but I don't.
This was when they did the 1:8 scale model of the Bugatti Chiron, which was the fastest supercar in the world. And they wanted to do a series where they were I was talking to the designers of this unique model. And then I went to Molsheim in France and Wolfsburg in Germany and spoke to the designers of the real car. So that was super interesting. And I got to drive it. It goes from 0 to 400. 100K and back to zero in 42 seconds, so it's insane.
Wow.
And then we did a second season where they went even more crazy and did a 1:1 scale model of it. So, and they built that in the Czech Republic. So I went to the Czech Republic and spoke to these Czech guys who did this model. And then they took it to Germany and actually made it drive using only the tiny Lego technique power function motors. Yeah.
Are there any Lego destinations for...
We're getting nerdy here.
Yeah. Welcome to This Week in Lego.
Are there any Lego destinations? Let's bring it back to travel. If you love Legos, are there any destinations that would be suitable for a family trip?
There are quite a few Legoland parks around the world. The original, the first one, is in Billund, Denmark, where Lego is, and it's in the middle of nowhere, or at least it was when they started. But
does it have a hotel like the one in Southern California?
I don't know. There is a Lego hotel, but I've never been to it. I don't know.
Well, and when my kids were really into Lego, there was no Legoland. So I'm curious, Jen, you are more my expert here on all things Legoland. What I heard from friends is Legoland is an absolutely best park for kids up to 5-6 years old. You've got a 10-year-old.
Oh, yes. I would say Legoland California is good for kids up to 11 or 12.
Okay.
And you can definitely hit those upper age limits if the kids love Legos. Legoland California also has a water park. And so while a lot of the exhibits and rides might favor younger kids in the 5 to 7, 5 to 8 range.
Okay.
There are some older, faster rides, but really the water park is more fun for the older kids. It really depends on your kid. If your kid loves Legos like mine does, who's almost 11, she's not done going.
Now, I know, Jen, that you live like right in the backyard for Legoland California.
Yes.
But have you ever tried the Lego Hotel?
Absolutely. The Legoland Hotel and the Legoland Castle Hotel are a kid's best lottery ticket for a sleepover.
They
are absolutely fantastic. Kids love them. The castle one is the newest one, and they differ slightly. So the castle has a really fantastic pool, and it has a more upscale restaurant. The normal Legoland Hotel has a kids' buffet. It's more colorful. It's got super fun elevators. So whether or not you stay at the Castle Hotel or the original Legoland Hotel, it's an absolute splurge and fantastic treat for kids up to age 10 to 12.
I'm going to start migrating us along here because we're going to be bringing in different guests. And I've got Rick Calvert, the head of T-Bex, just walked by here, so we're going to swap out Palibo for
my co-host.
For Rick, your co-host here. That's right.
While we're doing the swap, I should point out that the only thing that has more plastic faces than the Lego movie is actually that reboot of 90210.
Thank you for sharing this, Bud. So, first of all, some of the people may not have heard by the time this show comes out, although a lot of the news will have gotten
out. Maybe they're traveling to a remote location.
Maybe traveling to a remote location, but you did announce, first of all, a toast to a good conference here in Billings.
Thank you.
Some of the best content.
And to 10 years.
Yeah. 10 years, yeah.
This Week in Travel.
10 years,
and
thank you.
10 years of T-Bex.
Yeah, did we say that at the beginning?
No, Gary forgot it.
Gary forgot. So we're 10 years into This Week in Travel. This Week in Travel and T-Bex both turned 10. We just finished the 10th anniversary episode here of T-Bex in Billings, or we're in the process of finishing it. We're at the closing night party, and we just announced, you just announced, the next T-Bex, October 7th through 9th of 2020. Sorry, the next North America T-Bex will be in Lafayette, Louisiana. And we have the members of Lafayette right behind you here. We're going to grab them here in a minute.
Okay. Yeah. Next October, we'll be in Lafayette, Louisiana. They'll tell you more about this. But the thing that when we went to Ireland, you've been to both of them.
Yep.
To Dublin, the first time that I went, it was like, oh, Ireland's amazing. They all speak in that, you know, poetic accent, and they're all so friendly, and there's lots of Guinness. It was amazing, right? But then the next time we went back, we went to Killarney, and it was like, oh, it's even more Irish than Dublin was, is the feeling that I had. It was felt even more in touch with, like, Irish
historically,
culture.
It is a much more Irish
place. And I
place,
felt that same way going to Lafayette. You know, I'd been to New Orleans a
even
few times.
Even more Irish than Killarney.
Even more Irish than, exactly, than Ireland. No, more Louisianan, definitely more Cajun.
Yeah.
The music culture there is Zydeco, Cajun, Creole, which is a different thing, where New Orleans is jazz. And it's just the food there, again, Cajun food there. This is the heart of Cajun country, and the Festival des Acadiens, and I'm sure I'm murdering that, happens right after T-Bex.
We will have the Lafayette people on here in a minute, and they will tell us more about that. Why did you pick Lafayette, though?
Yeah, for exactly what I just said, that it's got a unique feel to
food,
it.
Yeah. Well, let's
the
face
boudin.
It. You picked it for the food.
All the food there is unreal, and you know I don't miss a lot of meals. But, again, there's an interesting thing about Zydeco music that it's not about just the music. It's about the dancing.
Yep.
And you'll hear a lot of the bands, when they get done, they'll go, thank you to the dancers. And it's like, whoa, this is a different. And so we took a dance lesson when we were there, and I'm a horrible dancer, as my wife will tell you. But it's just fun. So I think it's a real interesting place to go. They've got Lake Martin there. I mean, it's like when you think of Louisiana swamps, it's there. And there's culture, there's food, there's music,
and
there's
I don't want to skip
scenery.
Over the fact that is not the next T-Bex. The next T-Bex is in Sicily.
Yes, Catania.
Catania.
Is that where Catania is?
Yeah, it's at the
Catania's
base
in Sicily,
of
the second biggest city in Sicily.
Yeah, it's actually a very, you know, it's a great city, got a lot of history. A little bit gritty, I'm going to say right now, because, you know, they have sort of the whole range on that coast, the Ionian coast from Taormina down to Syracuse, where some of those cities are more working towns.
Yes.
Working cities as opposed to just. Catania is not that much of a tourist town.
It is
which
not.
Which is why I was interested that you decide to go there, because I liked it a lot, but it is not your typical tourist town.
Well, the weird thing about it. Spud's 100% correct. I mean, when we went there, they're like...
That is weird when I'm correct.
Yeah.
I found it odd.
they said, when we were there, they asked us, will you bring us tourists? And we're like, you know, we hope so. We're going to bring you a bunch of content creators. But they desperately want tourists there. And you say it's not a tourist town. It's not. But it should be. It is an,
no, absolutely.
It is an incredibly beautiful place. Greek history, Roman history, Catholic history, of course. The second biggest Catholic festival in the world is in Catania. And it's on the sea, the Mediterranean Sea.
You left out the Saracens and the Normans.
Yeah, the Saracens, the Normans.
Yeah, there's about 27 different cultures that have.
But I didn't get to the Mount Etna, the biggest volcano in Europe, the most famous maybe volcano in the world. Who has not been to an Etna's Pizza or Etna's restaurant somewhere in the world and seen a picture of Mount Etna? I didn't know it was in Catania. And
well, it's a little outside of it, but yes, that is the closest major town.
Yeah, well, you look from the sea through the city up to the mountain. And there is, so Catania is actually a tiny little city, but there's a whole bunch. And again, I thought it was a tiny little city. But with all the other cities that connected along the coastline, which is amazingly beautiful, it's actually, I think, 300,000, 400,000 people across multiple cities. Yep. I lost count of how many churches were there.
Rick, am I the only one who's wondering if there's going to be any mob excursions, any Godfather locations?
Well, there's an interesting thing, if you don't mind my saying.
You've obviously been there.
One of the differences between the Ionian coast, where Catania is that it's much more agrarian historically.
Yep.
I'm sorry, it's much more about the sea. It's much more about all the fishing and things like that.
Seafood.
Whereas the rest of the Sicily is more about farming and ranching and things like that. The more dry portions of the country were where most of the what we consider the Godfather's Sicily is, and the Ionian coast is not as much. Now, yes, there's a ton of tourist shops that will sell you a shirt that says, Godfather or, things like that. but that coast is sort of blessedly free of a lot of those problems that continue to this day in Sicily.
And so, again, something that Spud touched on is that it's not a tourist town. There are some tourist shops and tour operators and stuff, but it's just there's not really an infrastructure there for tourists. There's a lot of great hotels and really cheap, right? It's got everything that a tourist could want, but it's just not something that the city has focused on.
So that's going to make for a really unique T-Bags.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm planning on being there, but we are going to move you along here.
All right.
We're going to skip over that one and talk about the one after that because we're going to go to Lafayette here.
Thanks for being here.
Jen, have you been to Sicily while we're waiting here?
I have not. I've only been to Northern Italy.
I haven't. Same with me.
I have that weird question. Will there be Sicilian pizza?
I suspect there will be. But let's talk different food. Introduce yourself, please, for our audience.
Jesse Guidry from Lafayette, Louisiana. Happy to be here.
Hi, Jesse.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How's it going?
Oh, really great. Better now.
Jesse, I've got to admit, I didn't know anything about Lafayette. I don't know anything about Louisiana. But your guys' presence on stage and the video that you gave, I got so excited about it. I definitely want to come to this T-Bags.
It's so much fun. I mean, we knew whenever they told us we could show a video that we wanted to do something with music just because that, you don't need words. It plays. People get really excited about it. And then whenever we went up, we just kind of, let it roll and let the video speak for itself. I mean, you saw it. It's a lot of dancing, food.
Well, you guys said that we did not need to take dance lessons in advance. I definitely feel like I need to learn to two-step.
Well, that'll definitely be the pre-tour for sure. That'll be on the stop, so we'll hook you up with that. But honestly, I mean, you won't have a problem with it. You can't, I mean, especially nice-looking woman like yourself, you're not going to have any problems. The men love to dance. The women love to dance. I think the great thing about that is everybody dances with each other. I mean, there's not like husband and wives dancing. I mean, like, I'll get pulled into dance and it's just, really fun and free-spirited for sure.
I would like to say to the audience that listens to both Amateur Traveler and This Week in Travel, yes, we did have a Lafayette, Louisiana episode recently. I had no idea.
No, this was not planned at all. I didn't even know that you were in town. You said it to me afterwards.
I wasn't in town. I was interviewing somebody who was in town. I still haven't been to Lafayette. I am looking forward
now
to it.
Now you will.
I'm a fan of Tabasco and Cajun and Zydeco.
Now, Spud, have you been to Lafayette before?
I have been to Lafayette. I was doing a reconnaissance trip.
Ooh.
Where I was basically, working for the San Francisco Chronicle, and I was in New Orleans anyway, decided to drive across the state and say, is there enough here for me to really do something? And, of course, it was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful. I loved everything I saw, the Blue Dog Cafe,
George Rodrigue, beautiful artwork.
We stayed at the Full Moon, everything. It was great. The culture is wonderful, but there's just a feeling in the air that is different from almost anywhere else. And I'm going to ask you this, and I'm going to preface this by saying I'm not asking you to slag anybody else, but...
Please like someone else.
Well, no, yeah.
What I'm
asking is that a premise was created here just a minute ago that Lafayette is one of the most... Let's put it this way. Lafayette is more Louisiana than New Orleans is. Because New Orleans is its own thing for the most part, but Lafayette is more about Louisiana. Would you agree with that?
I'll say this. I mean, New Orleans is a really great gateway. I mean, everywhere we go, everybody knows New Orleans. They have a memorable experience there. What we try to encourage people is, like, there's more to Louisiana than New Orleans. I mean, sure, you're going to have a good time, but come on down to Lafayette, explore some of our other, you know, smaller cities. I mean, I wouldn't say we're, you know, it. We certainly are a world within ourselves. I mean, that's something that Gary, you've been there and you could speak to this. There's something special, like you said, that's in the air, that's an intangible. But I would say the same that could be said for each little town. We each have our unique thing. And I think what makes Lafayette special is that we work with all of those smaller towns to make it something unique. We work together. But I mean, New Orleans is a great gateway and they certainly have their own experience. Now, whether it's more or less Louisiana, I'll let you guys decide whenever we see y'all next year.
I will say this. I was in Lafayette for Mardi Gras 2018. Anyway. I had one of the best culinary experiences I've had in 12 years of travel. And I'm
really?
Not just blowing smoke up your butt because you're sitting here. We went to a boucherie. And if you don't know what a boucherie is, they basically butcher a hog.
Mm-hmm. Right in front of you.
They eat everything.
Right.
Everything.
There's
so
people that are waiting there. It gets cut. The meat goes to at least 9 different stations to do things with, and you get to see it all.
Sausage. They're making, you know,
boudin.
Steaks.
Boudin. Backbone stew. Oh.
Cracklins right out of the fryer. And I had never really had fresh head cheese before.
Mm. Did you eat the fraises?
I ate everything.
The Argan stew?
What?
The Argan stew?
Yep. I have no problem with any of that. And it was great. And that's why when I heard about it and you walked past me, the first thing I said, boucherie. I seriously hope you do one. I hope everyone goes. It is fantastic. It was an amazing experience. And we got to experience Mardi Gras both in Lafayette and in a small community.
Well, and could you comment a little bit, Gary, because I have heard it said that if I think that Mardi Gras in Lafayette is like Mardi Gras in Louisiana, then I am clueless.
Pretty much.
So, and I forget the name, when they do it in a small town.
Carrière de Mardi Gras, or Mardi Gras run.
So it was basically a parade. Everyone had porta potties on the float. it was a big drunk fest. There was a chicken involved, several chickens, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Who's the guy's
name? The capitaine.
Yeah. So that would chicken every so often. They would stop. Someone would catch the chicken. Some people, it was a really big deal, I think, for them to catch a chicken because they had never done it. And it was just a big party, and it was a roving party. And I walked, you know, a lot of people we were with all got in a float and I didn't. I walked it instead with everyone, the whole way so I could take photos, and fantastic photo experience.
Very colorful costumes, everybody's masks and hats, and it's very rooted in tradition. So it's organized chaos. It's not just a bunch of drunk people running around, right?
The example I always give is like how travel photography doesn't have to be exotic places is this. This is an authentic cultural experience. It's in the United States. And the other thing, outside of the boucherie and the Mardi Gras, was I didn't viscerally understand the difference between Cajun and Creole.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Which I also understood.
Yeah.
And the other neat thing is I always like to mix it all together. I didn't know a lot. Several years ago, I didn't know anything about the Cajuns. I heard the word. And it started in Nova Scotia, in Grand Pré.
Right.
And I learned about the Exodus. And I remember seeing pictures of Huey Long at Grand Pré taking Cajuns on a pilgrimage, basically, to Grand Pré. Met people in New Brunswick, Acadians. And then when I met Acadians in Louisiana, the big picture, kind of in the history,
clicked.
Everything made sense. And that's what I liked about it. It's more than just, oh, there are French people in Louisiana. But understanding how they got there,
right,
and why it's different.
Which is the treaty that ended the Seven Years' War.
Is basically that the Treaty of Utrecht?
Utrecht?
Yeah.
I
believe you have to cough up phlegm when you say anything.
Yeah, I'm sure there's an umlaut in there somewhere. I will say we should be clear that this is the boucherie is not to be confused with Williamsburg in Brooklyn, which is a doucherie. So I'm just saying it's
I'm glad we clarified that.
Hey, Jesse, can you teach our audience that special saying that you taught us on stage at T-Bex?
I don't know if I could do it as good as Mike, but here we go. So whenever we want to let the good times roll, we say, laissez le bon temps rouler, and then we always cap it off with a aïe.
Excellent. That seems like a perfect note to leave people with here as we move this show along.
Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you so much, Jesse.
Thanks for being here, Jesse.
Yes, come on in.
And now heading back out west to the city of Billings, Montana, introduce yourself to our audience, please.
Hello, my name is Allie Murnian. I am the leisure marketing manager for Visit Billings, Montana.
The leisure marketing.
Leisure marketing.
Do you wear a leisure suit ever?
I do.
Polyester blend?
I'm all about athleisure. So, no. Yes, I wear leisurely outfits, and I leisure around the office all the time selling leisure Billings.
So you were basically one of the people behind having the event here.
Yeah. I mean, me and my entire team. I think that one of the things that you'll find with our team is none of us would be where we are without the other, and we have an amazing staff.
I was talking to some of the other Billings people, and normally I have a very good idea of where the next T-Bex is always going to be held.
Yeah.
And when they announced this last year in New York, I was surprised. I got to admit, I wasn't expecting Billings, but I was pleasantly surprised. I've been to Montana before. I love Eastern Montana, because everyone is fixated on mountains and stuff. And I'm a prairie guy. I love the prairies. I love the wide open spaces. And I'm really glad they had it here.
Well, and a lot of people took the advantage of a Billings location. A lot of the people who came were excited not just about Billings, but Billings and 6 hours in any direction from Billings. So a lot of people came through Yellowstone, not surprising, or heading there later. My family and I went to North and South Dakota and did all the parks there, did Medicine Rocks State Park.
I have to take this opportunity.
Yeah.
I met Chris Christensen at Mount Rushmore. We did not plan this.
Nope.
He was sitting there talking to someone in his iPod Air, or his yeah.
Unfortunately, I was talking about elder care,
But I was like...
For yourself or somebody else?
Yeah, okay. not yet.
Is that
myself.
The award-winning voice of Chris Christensen? And it was just totally weird kind of... I just felt we had to bring that up at some point on the show. But
that is true, yeah. Six hours away.
Well, I will say, the fact that you visited Medicine Rock State Park...
which is cool.
Amazing state park.
It is an amazing state park. And we had it almost to ourselves.
Yeah, and being tucked into...
I guess I shouldn't tell people, right?
The very corner of the state and getting to enjoy. I mean, for us, those Montana moments are off the beaten path. We have two beautiful national parks in our state, and we're fortunate to have them. But I always love to tell people that your true Montana moments are just outside the park.
So when you say two, you mean two national parks, not national park sites, because you have more than that?
Yes, two national parks.
Six, okay.
And then, of course, the national monuments and the national recreational areas are separate of that. But yes, between Glacier National Park and Yellowstone National Park, the nation's first national park, we see a lot of people want to see those, and rightfully so. They're bucket list things to see. But I always tell people, you're doing yourself a disservice if you try and do Montana in 2 days. There's so much to explore in our beautiful state, and there's so much outside of those national parks. Spend time in the parks, but also spend time outside the parks. Get to know those small towns. Go to our state parks. We have 55 state parks across Montana, and they're phenomenal.
Okay, I really have to ask.
Yeah.
And this is going to be annoying, I apologize, but what makes your sky bigger?
Oh, my gosh. It just is. I guess I don't have a great answer for that. Besides, every time we host people or I talk to visitors or, I'm at a show and they've been to the state of Montana, they're like, you guys are not kidding when you say you're the big sky state. I mean, I just see for miles and beautiful, big open skies. And of course, with Billings and we have a full moon tonight, we're the largest city. We've got too much light pollution, but I mean, you drive 20 minutes out of town.
You do not have light pollution.
We do compared to the rest of the state, though. We do compare to the rest of the state. And I do always say that because if you drive 20 minutes in any direction, you guys are probably going to see the Milky Way. And how many places can you do that?
Well, we should put this in perspective for our listeners who have not been to Montana. Montana has 1 million people, and a tenth of them live in Billings, which makes it the largest city.
The largest city. So when I say the largest city, we have 110,000 people. Yeah. We're a whopping...
In terms of representatives in the House of Representatives, they only have one congressman, and they have the largest population with one congressman. So it is the least represented state in the House, but they make up for it in the Senate.
Yes.
That's a little Gary fact.
Yeah.
If we had Spud's Bell of Truth, I think we could use it for...
Oh, that's right.
And it's not that the sky is big. It's just that it looks small in comparison to the land. Oh. The land is small.
Yeah. I loved what you said about having experiences outside of the parks. I had a family reunion there about 2-3 years ago. So it was one of those generational trips. And my daughter got to see her first gold, her first bald eagle while they were on a river trip.
Yeah.
And when I hear them talk about Montana and Yellowstone, that's what they remember most, is that first time they saw the bald eagle.
Yeah, the experiences with nature in Montana are real. And obviously... We always say, you know, to be observed at a safe distance, but it really is special what we have here in our state. You know, it's not hard to sell the state of Montana, I'll say that.
And you have two national park sites that are closer to Billings even, and one is Little Bighorn, where I got a chance to go. Gary, did you get a chance to go to Little Bighorn?
In 1978.
Oh. And Pompey's Pillar, small site, but it's a pillar of sandstone.
That is where the Roman general Pompey was killed.
General Pompey signed his
Hey, you guys
name.
Watch it. I am a big Lewis and Clark
Oh,
nerd.
Sorry. Where Clark signed his signature on this rock as he came back from the Lewis and Clark expedition and when they were on the way back. But we are going to move along. We thank you so much for hosting us and for your hospitality here in Billings.
Yeah, and I just want to say thank you guys for all coming. It means a lot to us to have you here, and thank you for enjoying our beautiful city and state.
Thank you for having us.
Got two guests now who are some of the most true-blooded Americans that I know. They are...
Yeah, just listen to us.
They're not Americans. They're Americans. why don't you introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Kaz from Why Travel Blog.
And I'm Craig, the other half from the same site. Yeah.
Hi, Kaz. Hi, Craig. Great to have you here.
Hey, guys. Cheers.
So wait, is that a New England accent is that I'm detecting there? Is that what that is?
The very newest England accent.
That's a Raleigh accent. A Raleigh, North Carolina accent.
Nice. Nice. I like it a lot. So go right ahead.
I was going to say, you guys are from Australia. You have an extremely popular travel blog. You've come to the U.S. You've adopted... college football, which I think is the most... Yes.
I thought we got to talk about family RV travel.
We'll get to that.
We can do that. Let's talk sports.
No, I keep joking, Craig, online that they're the most American people. Like the conversion to the dark side is almost complete. Tell us about your experience. How did you come here and what's your story?
Through Caroline that we first come to the U.S. She was an elementary school teacher in 2004 through a program, and I got placed in Raleigh, North Carolina, which we'd never heard of before, because the company was based in Chapel Hill, and we just fell in love with the place and the lifestyle, and it's a great college area. I love my sports. I grew up playing a professional sport, and
Which professional sport?
Rugby league. I played for a team called the North Sydney Bears in Sydney, which they actually don't exist anymore. But
full rugby or rugby sevens?
Full rugby.
Okay,
There's rugby league and there's rugby union.
Yeah, it's a different code.
Okay.
And
the way I explain it to Americans, it's the difference between the NFL and the CFL.
But see, I've been to the World Cup of rugby
Canadian
sevens. So that's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
That's like nine-man football.
Tell me how tight the uniforms are.
That's my question.
Thank you, Kaz. Thank you.
They've gotten tighter over the years, so I'm kind of glad. I retired early.
Now I have to ask, just because we are talking about rugby, how many people actually tape their ears to their head so that they don't get them ripped off?
Just the guys that stick their heads up bums in scrums, basically.
Okay,
so
all right.
The cauliflower ears, but yeah.
Okay, all right.
If you play in the backs out in the. How would I explain it? Like a wide receiver or a running back? Yeah, no, they wouldn't do that.
Okay.
Yeah, just the guys in the scrum.
That's good to know. Good to know.
So you guys bought an RV, and your family has been traveling around the United States, after extensive travels through Australia, I should say. You came to the U.S. and now we're doing it here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we bought an RV 10 months ago and we're traveling around the U.S. We've been doing mostly the western part of the country.
And it's so big. Tell us how big you're...
Oh, my gosh. The western part of the country or the travel trailer? Maybe,
I don't think it's that big, actually, for American standards. But
the trailer
Australia,
is very big.
It's a 37-foot travel trailer and we got an F-250 truck. So overall, we're like 55 foot.
You know you're American when you get an F-250 truck.
Yes, absolutely.
I was going to say.
I only aspire to an F-150.
Going back to Gary's comment, like when we first come over, it was like, I'll never own a truck like that. Like, that's just ridiculous. Like, the gas and the size of the thing. But we're getting more American by the day.
I was going to say, you guys don't usually even say RV. You say caravan, right?
Caravan.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So we confuse everyone because I call it a caravan, but over here it's a travel trailer, and I'm using the hashtag van life, which apparently is a no-go.
That is... What?
Because
you don't have a van.
I don't
have
a van.
Trailer.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to... Our audience has already heard me daydreaming about hashtag van life. We'll skip that.
Uh-huh.
But tell us about your favorite things about showing your kids America, literally from the highways, from the small towns, from the ice cream stands that you stop along the way.
Yeah.
What are they enjoying?
Wow. Well, they love the big cities because Australia doesn't really have them. Like, New York just absolutely blows their mind. But I think we do a lot of hiking. We're out in national parks. We're bike riding, doing all that kind of stuff. And I think they're just, like, blown away. Like, one of their favorite places is the Grand Canyon. To hear your two young children, especially in the age that we live in, that everything's about tech and big shining lights, to hear them just say, wow, you know, some of these national parks and that we're going to, it just blows
us away.
Okay, you
brought up the tech. Do they play with tablets and phones?
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So they're American, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a constant struggle, you know, like limiting their time. But the thing is, like, it's good that we do get out and hike and bike ride and kayak and stand-up paddleboarding. So they do have a lot of time off devices as well. So.
But how many blog posts are they really writing? Are they earning their keep at this point, or...?
How many blog posts are they writing?
How many blog posts are they writing?
Our eldest has written a few for us. We're encouraging her to write a few more, and we're hoping that she will. And our youngest has actually even written one as well.
Wonderful. How old are they?
12 and 8.
Okay, so how do you balance your time homeschooling or road schooling versus working on your own projects?
So I used to be an elementary school teacher, so I could take care of the homeschooling. And over the years, as we've traveled more with them, I've really let a lot go because I've seen how much has been unnecessary, and they just learn so much from our travel experiences that it's not necessary for them to learn from a textbook and do all that kind of stuff, because we're out at Hawaii Volcano National Park and they're learning there from being in the experience about volcanoes.
One thing they love doing is the Junior Ranger program in the National Parks. It's such an awesome initiative.
What do they get to do with that?
Oh, well, every park's kind of different, but you know, like learning about the wildlife or the plant life, you know, just like the landscapes and fun activities, going to ranger talks. It's like really hands-on stuff.
I have to ask you guys, your daughters are quite young still. Uh-huh. Are they adopting an American accent? Any Americanisms, anything like that you guys don't exhibit?
Yes, they do have an American accent. Our eldest, we actually lived with her in the U.S. from when she was 9 months to 3 years. So she began talking in the U.S. So she actually had a Southern accent when she started talking. So we went back to Australia and that disappeared. But now that we're back, that's come back very quickly for her.
Good day there, mate.
her accent can be quite mixed, and our youngest is now, it's starting to change.
So, no, it's more, good day, y'all.
Y'all, yeah. Apparently, I say it really wrong, and my oldest doesn't like it when I say y'all.
And our youngest is Savannah, instead of, you know, like, how we would say it in Australia. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
I still remember when my kids were 10 and 9, we went to Rome, and my kids are not history buffs, and I am, but when they were in Rome, I remember my son running around saying, Mom, that's the Arch of Constantine, and he is, you know, and knowing who he was in a way that I have never seen before or since them get interested in history.
Yeah, it's very cool.
give us your best American travel tip. Maybe it's a state park, maybe it's a national park, maybe it's a roadside food stand. What have you individually or as a family enjoyed most about being in the United States?
I mean, you hear it all the time, but I think the diversity of the country is just amazing, like the different experiences, like from the cities to the national parks, the state parks, the mountains, the deserts, the canyons. It's just like, you know, there's something for everybody. So I think that's been pretty cool.
Thank you, Craig. Kaz, you have anything to add?
Wow, so many things that I love.
Favorite meals?
Gosh, so many great food. Seattle, the coffee. Australians love their coffee. In Seattle, the coffee is just like world class. Some of the best that we've had.
When I visited Australia, now this was many, many years ago. I think we're not quite 20 years ago, but 17. I went for an iced coffee in Brisbane.
Oh, yeah?
And it was nuts. There was ice cream in it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a totally different kind of coffee out there.
Yeah.
Well, that's funny. Like, every time I go and order a coffee, people say hot or cold. I'm like, really? Like, I only have it hot, but like...
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So that's interesting.
And you've gotten used to eating your burgers without the beetroot.
Sorry?
You've gotten used to eating your burgers without the beetroot?
Yeah.
And the fried egg.
Yeah.
And the fried egg.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up with you guys, tell us one thing that is better about Australia than America, one thing that's better about America than Australia.
Well, Australia, hands down, the beaches. Like, everyone talks about California and the beaches and stuff. Like, it just don't compare. Like, beaches, we kill you.
Yeah, I was definitely going to say the beaches. What's better about America than Australia? I'd have to definitely say the mountains. I mean, we don't have mountains.
Yeah, we have hills, not mountains.
Yeah.
You guys have mountains.
That is true.
All right, and before we wrap up, I want to tell everyone where they can find you online.
Sure, you can find us at whytravelblog.com or at whytravelblog, all the social channels.
And that's why for yellow.
Thank you so much, Kaz, Craig.
All right, cheers, guys.
Wonderful to hang out with you here at T-Bex Billing.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Fun. Cheers.
Come on in.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Now we've got Jim and Tony. Introduce yourselves, please.
Well, I'm Tony Price.
I'm Jim Scott. We are friends at Carry On. We're from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. You can find us at www.friendsofcarryon.com or at Facebook or at Instagram at friendsofcarryon.com.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Friends of Carry On.
I want to know before we do that.
Sorry, Craig.
Do you carry on your luggage or do you just carry on?
Both.
Okay. All right. Well, there we go. All right.
Perfect. That's kind of how it started because we're always, you know, one of those things that we don't like to have big luggage or any of that. If it can't fit in a carry-on, we're not taking it.
Okay.
Again, we have a tendency since we started as fraternity brothers doing this travel, we do carry on a little bit, so.
Fraternity brothers, this was like 2-3 years ago?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's kind of what started is obviously we're a group of friends and all that, but you go back to the college days, and I'm sure you all have suffered from FOMO at some point in your life.
Every day.
So even back then, you know, it's like, no, I don't feel like going out again tonight, but I'm afraid I'm going to miss something, so you do it. Well, we started doing these trips, and you didn't want to not go. You see everybody posting on the Facebook groups or the group chats that we have. It's like, oh, I got to go on that. So that's sort of what got it going.
Tell us a little bit about it. Is it just you and your friends, or is it welcome to the public? And what kind of trips do you organize?
Well, I would say the first big one is probably like kind of our kickoff thing, where we went from Pamplona, Madrid. We ran with the Bulls in Pamplona. We did Barcelona. Then we jumped on a plane and went to Marrakesh. You know, slept in the Sahara Desert after a ride with a camel. So that was like a big one that really kind of kicked it off. And we had 14 people on that. So that was pretty spectacular. And since then, we've had a variety of them between Oktoberfest, you know, in Munich. Where else have we gone?
Tromso, Norway for the Northern Lights.
Yeah. We just went to Greece in May. Yeah.
What's the decision process? I mean, basically, how does a group that large decide, okay, all of us are going to really enjoy this particular destination?
Yeah, that's the beautiful part. Not everybody goes on every trip. So we have this core group, I would say, of about 10 people,
right.
Plus spouses and things like that. But the what happens is somebody will say, you know what, I think I want to go to Greece. And they put it out there. Then a couple people will say, yeah, I'm into it. The next thing you know, somebody books a flight. And then from there, it just goes. And it's amazing how many people just jump into it.
Tony and Jim, where's your next trip, and is it full? Because I can speak firsthand, you guys are two fun guys
to
party with.
Oh, yeah. I've actually been hanging out with these guys in the bar at the hotel.
Okay, Fancy Pants. I hung out with them at a pub last night.
I'm just saying, we have a history, and I'm trying to befriend them, or at least make them think I'm a cool guy so that I can get to go on some of these damn trips. I'm just saying.
Well, the next couple, we're not on the next two. This is funny. So we have our friends are going to Italy next month.
I was about to say, saying
where?
Italy is, yeah, like saying,
right. Yes. Yeah. I don't honestly know. I know they're going to be, they're going into Rome.
Really what
they invited us. We decided we couldn't come.
Okay,
it was just too much going on. We were coming here, and they're literally leaving like in a week.
They're going into Rome and then going south to Pistanzo. I'm going to say it wrong.
Who are they? I thought you guys were leading the trip.
Not that's what it's friends that carry on. So these friends is Eric and John and some
they're
wives are going
group
with them.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's very, it's open to everybody.
Oh, so there's women. I thought it was just guys only.
Oh, no.
Those are the fun trips, but the wives are definitely welcome,
yeah,
and go when they can go. So
the next
it's
big one I think that Jim and I are definitely going on is Southeast Asia, and that starts around December 28th. We haven't booked our flights yet, but we're going to be in Bangkok for New Year's Eve. And then we're heading down to Cambodia, and then over to Vietnam.
Okay, now this is going to be a little off topic, but sort of on topic.
I know where he's going with that.
I really like the way, with your accent, you say the names of Italian cities.
No.
Feel free to rattle off a few more, because I think it's wonderful.
I don't know if I can do that. Well, we got Bologna and Parma and.
See, now you're just trying. I'm just saying. Before it was like, wow.
You gotta make it natural.
I've never heard that type of accent say the names of Italian cities before. It's beautiful.
Spud talking about destinations. I thought he was going to ask if they were going to Pad Pong.
Pamplona?
No, Pad Pong. in other words, home of the bar girls and ping pong set.
Right.
And I don't mean table tennis.
I feel like we've lost track of which podcast we're on. I'm going to wrap you up and move us along here, because we have a line that is forming here. But thank you so much for joining us. Tell people where to find you.
Online. We are at www.friendsofcarryon.com and Instagram and Facebook at friendsofcarryon.com.
Now, how do you spell carry on? Just so we
carry on.
Gary. Yes. Yeah.
Not Gary Art. Carry on.
So carry on.
It is literally CARRYON.
All right.
It's like carry on bag or carry on at the bar.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, guys. Real
thank
you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Tony.
Okay, we're switching out, and we've got Nora Dunn.
How are you?
Great to have you here. Introduce yourself. Tell us about your website.
My name is Nora Dunn. I am otherwise known as The Professional Hobo, which is also, of course, my website. Born of 12 years of full-time travel around the world.
Wow.
The professional hobo and the professional hobo and the amateur traveler. I don't know what were all ranges of the spectrum here.
She's been on Amateur Traveler?
No. It's the first time we've met.
First time.
You have one star for T-Bex. Is this your first T-Bex?
No, I just don't know how to follow rules.
I see.
It is my second, and I figured that the stars were only supposed to be for previous T-Bexes that I had attended. The first and only T-Bex that I attended was in my hometown of Toronto in Canada, back in, I think it was 2013.
Wow.
I wasn't living in Toronto at the time, of course, but I figured it was a good chance for me to go home for a
visit. I didn't follow directions, and all of my stars fell off. I put them on the outside of the plastic.
Well, that's
and
a metaphor
just,
for so many things.
Yeah,
isn't it, really?
There's a definite metaphor there somewhere.
Gary's not here to say it, but for some of us, the number of stars has turned to be a little competitive.
Oh,
because
really?
There have been 22 T-Bexes, and Gary has been to 20, and I've been to 21.
I am
shocked.
And he
threatened to kneecap me when he ran into me in
or he thought later on he should have kneecapped me when he ran into me at Mount Rushmore so that I would not get to this T-Bex and he would catch up.
Now, this is the only plug I will give to the Inappropriate Traveler podcast is that we just interviewed Nora in one of the most stunning, startling, and possibly disturbing podcasts ever, and that will be coming out fairly soon. And she is a fascinating person with a great history.
You know, it's one of those things that I like to anecdotally work stories into my experience, because I can't possibly actually just say, you know, I've done this, this, and this. So, you know, when I'm talking to someone, I'll say, you know, oh, yeah, so there was that time I was competitive skydiving and I did this, this, and this. And, oh, yeah, there was that time I was racing motorcycles and that happened. And
well,
see,
it really helps if you say it with the skydiving sort of way to say
skydiving.
It.
Skydiving.
Very Thurston Howell III yes, type of voice. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's one of those things. So, you know, and the interesting thing about travel in general is everyone figures this out at some point. Everyone, you know, when you come home after a long trip, people say, oh, my God, how was your trip? Show me your pictures. I want to hear all about it. But they don't really want to hear all about it. They want to hear, like, the 30-second version of it. And they don't
Absolutely.
Really want to see your
right.
pictures. They want to see two. So I've learned 12 years of full-time travel is pretty hard to fit into 30 seconds and two pictures. So what I do is I anecdotally work in stories. So, you know, oh, yeah, so there was that time when I was in Australia or I was shooting a television show while jumping off a cliff in New Zealand. And, oh, yeah, there was that time I was eating
fermented
fish. But
which of us hasn't done that, really?
Well, truly.
Yeah, no, actually, you've touched on a phenomena that is often overlooked, which is place dropping. Yes. You know how people name drop. Place dropping, I wrote a column on this once, and place dropping basically involves saying, oh, that time when I was getting a shave and a haircut in Tunisia. Because you always have to have something weird that doesn't necessarily fit with the place. So my one was always that time that I was jamming with Bulgarians in Malaga, Spain. And you begin that sentence, and once you begin that sentence, it's like, people have to know what the hell the story was behind that. So yeah, I mean it's wonderful. So place dropping is actually an art form.
It is.
And we are among a crowd that does it either better or absolutely horrifyingly bad, but that does it better than most. So.
But are you talking about that time I got a Turkish bath in Munich, Germany?
Exactly.
Da, 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 da.
That's pretty much exactly
it. And if you say it with the Thurston Howell accent, though.
Yeah. No, the Thurston Howell III, yeah, it, absolutely. And I think one of the other aspects of it is you really do have to have something that was so ridiculously odd. Well, you're so ridiculously odd to what's going on that it really doesn't fit. That it really doesn't fit the actual place all that much. And so when
it's
you're
starting to rain.
It's starting to rain.
I'm not quite sure what we do.
We're going to move.
Do we move the table under the awning?
I think we're moving the table
okay,
under the awning.
Oh, my
all
gosh.
Right. Let's do that quickly.
Whoa. This is exciting.
Okay, we are still organizing ourselves after the rain incident. Yes. Angie, welcome.
Hi, everybody.
Happy 10-year anniversary.
Yeah, girl, happy 10-year anniversary to you. Can you believe this?
No. Well, yes, but
we,
no.
We did a show of hands in the audience of how many people were at the original T-Bex and were still here. And Angie was one of, I kind of,
a handful.
Five.
Yeah.
And three of those were Jen and Gary and I and
who Angie.
Angie. And I thought there was one more. Maybe it was only one of four.
Nancy.
Nancy Brown.
Nancy Brown.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
How we were
crazy
at the very
is that?
Original T-Bex in Chicago.
That blows my mind.
Was that 2009?
Yeah, 2009.
But you are no longer doing this by yourself.
Nope. I've got a teammate.
Awesome.
Woo.
Well, introduce her.
Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Rachel. I am Angie's little sister. And
little sister, you were six, I believe, at the time of the first T-Bex.
No,
no,
not that
she was 16 when the first T-Bex happened.
It was
she
10
was
years
16.
Ago. Yeah.
So there was no actual strategy of bringing her on, but you know, I think ultimately, of course, we want to work together and hang out all the time. So it worked out.
Yeah. I mean, you've been blogging for 13 years.
Yep.
And we've always had an idea that we wanted to do it together. And 2 years ago, after I graduated, I had a real job. You called me and said, can you quit and do this with me full time? I was like, oh, yeah.
My
2 weeks were in.
My initial plan was, you need to go, like, be your own person and have your own life. I'm not just going to foist my career as a blogger on you, you know.
What the hell?
Literally 7 months, and she was like, my job is the worst. And I was like, come on, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's make it work. We're going to figure it out.
And so you rebranded at that point. So when Well, you were Angie Away. And you are still Angie Away, but you are also half of
The Jet Sisters.
Woo! Yeah, the Jet Sisters video series, which is what we kind of want to work on going forward.
Well, and you've been doing a lot of video this year.
Yes.
Favorite spot for the video that you've shot this year?
Ooh, that's tricky.
I might have to say Williamsburg.
And I was going to say Finger Lakes.
Oh, gosh.
They both ended up being so photogenic and so... We just had a fun time. So, yeah, either one of those were probably... Can you pick two?
You can pick one.
That's,
yeah.
There you go.
That is completely acceptable.
I liked Williamsburg because I went there, you know, in junior high, did all the boring history stuff. But then I went back as an adult.
Ooh.
I was like, this history stuff is amazing. Why didn't I care? That's just because in junior high, you're like, I just want to hang out with boys.
Yeah, you don't necessarily realize how interesting history is when you're a kid.
Yeah.
So then you go back and you're like, oh my gosh.
The Battle of Yorktown.
Yeah. Wow, Hamilton really opened the doors of history for this one.
Well, and what we've learned is that history is interesting, but many history teachers are not.
You know, that makes 100%. A really good point.
Yeah.
My wife had a history teacher who her idea of teaching history was you write everything on the blackboard, the kids copy it down, and then when you get to the other side, you erase it and you write more stuff.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, no, that's,
and
that
she hates history, or she thought she hated history.
Right.
It turns out, you know.
No, history's actually amazing if you have the right teacher or the right experience to kind of drop you in the middle of
it. Or historic novel or movie or whatever.
Or a musical.
Or a travel experience. Yeah.
I was about to say, is that one of those things that drives your personal travel is the history of a place?
Oh,
and
yeah.
And how so? Give me an example.
Actually, Hamilton the musical has taken us to a lot of places. We went to Nevis last year, which is where Hamilton was born.
We may be the best traveled fans of Alexander Hamilton because we just are seeking out the places. I don't know that it's a thing people search for, but we're really into pop culture travel.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll go to all the Jane Austen sites we can get our hands on. The Jane Austen Festival.
The Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey. We went to this unbelievable vintage garden party at Downton, literal Downton Abbey, and we were such fangirls. We met with the Countess of Carnarvon, the real Countess of Downton Abbey, and it was amazing. That's the kind of stuff we love to do. Dress up in costumes, learn the real history of the place, meet the people, and just be total nerds in the process.
Angie, you forgot.
I have to absolutely see that. Did you write that up somewhere?
Oh, it's written. It's video. We've got everything.
I was mildly annoyed that I was missing the opening of the Downton Abbey movie.
Same.
Because I was here at T-Bex. Of course, I'm thrilled to be at T-Bex.
Yeah, it happened, girl.
I had to beg my friends to wait for me to come home.
No, that's
to see the movie.
Step one, we're going to the theater and seeing Downton Abbey, probably in a costume.
Oh,
because I have a costume closet at
home. What are you going to wear, and have you been to the castle?
Oh, yeah. That's where we went to the vintage garden party and had tea with the Countess of Carnarvon at the actual castle.
Can you just expand on that a little bit? Tell us what the city is, how Americans can get there.
It's super easy.
Where do you stay?
Super easy. Fly into London, book a tour to... What's it called? Highclere Castle.
Yes.
So easy. Book a ticket. They have all these extra add-ons. You can see all the Egyptian artifacts in the basement.
Egyptian? I thought we were talking about Downton Abbey.
Well, the 4th Earl of Carnarvon actually was part of the expedition that discovered King Tut's tomb.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Curse and all. So they have a ton of artifacts in the basement of Highclere Castle, which is the home of Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
Like, get out of here. It's awesome. Great place to wear a costume.
As
if you ever get the chance to go to one of their tea parties or one of their 20s vintage like dances, you absolutely must if you're a fan.
I am not a fan of Downton Abbey, but I am a fan of Hamilton, and I collect portraits of Hamilton.
Oh, no way! I didn't know that about you.
If anybody has portraits of Hamilton in their wallet right now, I will collect them.
Oh, get out of here. You know what this man's saying.
Now, I think it's very interesting that you use the word step one, because most people who love Downton Abbey quite that much, it's a 12-step program. I'm just saying.
We love it. We love it so much. But we also love Napoleon Dynamite.
We went to Idaho.
We literally drove to Idaho to dress up like Napoleon, Pedro, and Deb. And go in front of all the different houses they used in Preston, Idaho.
And all of this is someplace that people can find it.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
That's wonderful.
Absolutely.
And speaking of finding things, where can people find you on the internet?
People can find us at www.angieaway.com. And we're on Instagram at Angie Away, the Jet Sisters, and Ray Away.
And Sheba Away. It's my dog.
Corey, would you introduce yourself to our audience here?
Yeah, I'm Corey Lee, and I run the travel blog Curb Free with CoreyLee.com. So it's all about traveling the world as a wheelchair user. I started it about 5.5 years ago, and it's been going nonstop ever since.
I just want to say, Corey has been killing it this year.
I am jealous of Corey.
So Corey has won the gold medal in Lowell Thomas Award for Best Travel Blog. You won a Webby Award this year.
Yeah, this past May.
For best travel, best internet personality?
Best personal blog.
Okay. Yeah. You were named, is it Mobility Magazine?
New Mobility Magazine,
Person of the Year. And you've been launching tours.
Yeah.
You've been doing all sorts of stuff. And really, I think you're one of the best examples of travel blogging that there is right now.
Well, thanks, Gary.
You have your niche, and you've been just killing it and dominating it. And thanks. I just want to say congratulations, because you've done a fantastic job.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it. And I learned a lot of it from you. So at the first T-Bex, I think...
That's really what I wanted to hear.
Right. You said to never say no to an interview. And I've stuck to that advice pretty hard. So because of that, I think I've gotten a lot of really great opportunities. Yeah.
Well, and I want to talk a little bit about the opportunities. Where have you gone that our listeners are going to go, no way, somebody in a wheelchair can't do that?
So most recently, this past December, I went to India. And that was kind of somewhere that I never thought would be wheelchair accessible.
I can't get my wife to go to India.
Yeah. And it actually wasn't accessible at all until 2 years ago when a company launched accessible tours there. So they now have wheelchair accessible transportation and tours, and they've really like scouted out the country and done a great job of making it more accessible for people. So it was one of my favorite trips ever.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah.
And you just had a tour in Iceland, right?
Yeah, I went for the second time this past July and did a curb-free group tour. So every year on an annual basis, I do a group tour where some of my followers can join. We went to Morocco in 2018, and then Iceland 2019. And next year, we're doing 3 tours in Costa Rica.
Corey, if you don't mind my asking, there's among a lot of people I know who are longtime travelers, there's a certain amount of burnout factor where you just get a little bit jaded about all the places you've been. I have never experienced that with you. I've never ever heard you say anything bad about anything. And so I'm curious, what's your kind of philosophy to the places you go and the travel that you do?
Yeah, I mean, I always try to look at it from the perspective of, you know, my followers and readers and really other wheelchair users out there. So, I mean, I know that when I'm traveling to India that they need that information. They need a place to go where they can see what's possible. And I want to be the one to, you know, show them what's possible. And I think that by kind of keeping that mentality every time that I travel, it really, you know, makes me not have maybe the burnout and, you know, keep going at it as hard as I can. But, yeah.
No, that's wonderful. I'm glad to hear that because, again, it's really easy for people who do a lot of travel to feel like, you know, oh, I've seen it all, I've done it all, and I've never gotten that vibe from you, and that's wonderful. I love that about what you do and what you write.
Yeah, I think you just always have to remember the why you started, and then it makes it a lot easier.
You know, I find at TBEX, I usually come home and I have a I'm so glad I'm doing this, I want to work harder kind of moment. That for me was the SEO talk earlier in the week. And then I have at least one, I am such a loser, I cannot measure up to this person, I should just quit kind of moment. That I had a couple minutes ago here. Yeah. Impressed, but also just like, okay, I'm done. I just, you know.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, no, I had a little bit of that too, because I might have 13 Lowell Thomas Awards, and for which I'm patting myself on the back, and yet you have so many much more important stuff. You're doing a great job, and you're getting recognized for it, and I think that's great.
No, thank you. I'm just really
glad. But it does make me feel a little self-conscious.
I'm just really glad that I think the travel industry is finally, you know, realizing that, you know, wheelchair users are out there and we want to travel. So, I mean, people with disabilities spend over $17 billion per year just on travel. And I, like, whenever I'm telling that in different speeches, like, the destinations look at me with, like, wide eyes, and they can't believe those numbers are accurate, but they really are. So, and when you realize the impact that, you know, accessible travel has, it makes it a lot easier for different destinations to want to work with me, I think.
What are simple things that destinations can do that they're not doing to make things more accessible?
This is easy. So put it on your website. So, I mean, anytime that any wheelchair user around the world is looking for a trip, they're going to go to Google and look it up and go to the destination's website usually. And so just by having, you know, an accessibility tab on there, or even in a, like an FAQ section on the website, like saying what's accessible, that would be a tremendous help. But I also think it's important to know that the word accessible means different things to different people. So don't just say that you're accessible. Actually, you know, be specific and tell me exactly what makes that destination accessible.
Corey, you know I love travel apps. Is there a best travel app for accessible travelers?
Really for accessible travelers. I mean, I'm not aware of any like really great apps, but there is a fantastic Facebook group called the Accessible Travel Club, and it has almost 10,000 members. It's where I go anytime I'm researching a trip, and I'll post a question. Usually someone has been to that destination and can give me some input. So it's a really good
resource.
Are they
open to the public? Can new joiners join in, or is it a private group?
It's a public group, so anyone can join as long as you have a disability, or even if you know you're a care attendant or something like that.
Oh, sure, that makes sense, yeah. And can you tell people again where they can find you as we wrap this up?
Yeah, so on my blog, curbfreewithcoreylee.com, or I'm on Instagram at curbfreecoreylee.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much, and
thank you.
We're going to talk to a representative from one of my favorite places in the world, a place that I visited back in 2007. It's been a long time since I've been there. It does not get a ton of visitors. It's the Solomon Islands. And for those of you who are not familiar, or probably most familiar with the Battle of Guadalcanal from World War II. Guadalcanal is the main island in the Solomon Islands. It's the capital. It's the location of the capital, Honiara. And introduce yourself, Susan.
Hi, my name is Susan Bajecki, and I handle public relations for North America for Tourism Solomons.
Hi, Susan. Welcome.
Thank you. Lovely to be here in lovely Billings.
The last time I looked, the number of visitors to the Solomons was about 10,000 a year. I don't know if it's changed radically.
Yeah, we're about 28,000 visitors per year from you know to the destination.
So, give everyone kind of briefly the quick summary of the Solomon Islands. Where is it, and why should they visit?
Well, it's northeast of Australia. They should visit because, you know, we're known for our World War II history and our wonderful world-class wreck diving. That's what we're known for.
We had a conversation earlier today, Susan, and I love the idea of going to a place that's known for one thing and then looking for something else. So you guys have amazing World War II history, and you have amazing diving, but is there anything beyond that?
There certainly is. We have wonderful culture. people that come to the destination can learn how to make shell money. They can learn how to coral plant. There's just a host of, you know, cultural activities. We have wonderful panpipe dancers from one of our provinces called Malaita, and that's where panpipe dancing hails from. So it's really, you know, a lot of fun.
You need to explain for the listeners at home about shell money, because I know the South Pacific has a history of, you know, the island of Yap, of Palau, of these various other places in Micronesia and
this
around.
This is Melanesia, actually, for
right.
the most part. There's a Polynesian part in Ranelagh and Bellona. But it's mostly Melanesian as opposed to Micronesian.
Right, but there's also, what I'm saying is that there seems to be a theme about what we would consider in the Western world odd kinds of money. Please tell us about shell money.
Shell money is the women in certain villages in Malaita, they produce this wonderful shell money where they rope it together. It's presented in shells, and it's a form of currency that is used in the Solomon Islands today to pay off land debt. They give it to you when you get married, so it's really quite something special because it's still in existence today.
Susan, I don't know that much about the Solomon Islands. Could you reel it back to a beginner level and tell us how we would actually get there?
Well, the easiest way to get there, we have three gateways from the United States. We have Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Honolulu. And you would fly from Los Angeles, my home city, 10 hours to the Fiji Islands on Fiji Airways. From Los Angeles, and then transfer either Fiji Airways or Solomon Airlines directly into the Solomon Islands, Haniyara, the capital city.
No, that's great. Gary is much more the expert about this. I've only been, for the most part, to Palau, and that's my only frame of reference is Palau and the diving, the money, the culture, and things like that.
Very similar, yes.
Right, but is this one of those places that has so few visitors still that you can get, I think the phrase you used is, this is Fiji 30 years ago.
It's correct. We really are a little bit off the grid. Only because I think it's hard. It's a little further to get there, you know.
That's not a bad example. Fiji is also kind of a Melanesian destination. A little bit different. I would say the closer analogy would be Papua New Guinea. Okay. In that, if you look at Papua New Guinea, Solomon Islands are kind of the tail of that archipelago. Okay. And you're right, there's a lot of World War II history. So when I told people I was American, their attitude changed, and they're like, oh, because they assumed I was Australian, because mostly Australians that visit.
You mean they actually liked Americans?
You actually look pretty Australian, I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's right.
Or Canadian.
But when I said, you know, oh, yeah, my great uncle, he fought here. He was in World War II. They're like, oh. Then their attitude changed, and there was very positive. It's like, oh, we got to show you these sites, blah, 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 blah. And it was a great experience. And I've been talking about the Solomons for a decade because so few people go there. So few people know about it, that it even exists.
How did you get there, Gary?
I flew.
I know, but tell me the route.
I went from Fiji to New Caledonia to Vanuatu to the Solomon Islands, and then from there I flew to Nauru to Kiribati.
That sounds expensive.
I think we're starting to understand why
Fiji Airways has special deals to Fiji.
From LAX.
There was about a $599 to $600 special that recently was in the market, and you fly from LAX or San Francisco direct 10 hours to Fiji, and then 3 hours on to the Solomon
Islands.
Thank
you, Susan. Yeah. That's talking to more of a realistic budget. I don't know what Gary's talking
about.
And
that's very doable, because you know, the beauty of going to the South Pacific is you fly into Fiji, spend some time in Fiji, and then you go on to the Solomons and experience that. So if you're going that far, you might as well experience two countries.
Well, no, and this is a perfectly, I love this explanation. How do I put this? You were talking earlier about how hardly anyone goes there, and usually the explanation for why nobody goes there is because it's hard to get there. But you're saying that it's not that difficult. Why aren't more people going there, and what would it take to convince folks?
Well, I think it's they're not aware that it's there. It's like Vanuatu and Tonga and Kiribati and, you know, other lesser-known destinations in the South Pacific. I mean, people tend to go to Tahiti and Fiji and South Pacific islands that they know.
Okay. No, that makes total sense, because I think in general, Westerners look at the South Pacific as, man, that's just going to be a giant investment in airtime and sitting on a plane. But what you're saying is that you not only get amazing culture and amazing history, but you get to see a much earlier version of a lot of the South Pacific.
We do. It's really off the grid. Our coral reefs are untouched. You know, we really have, the culture is really much, very much intact. So it's really special.
Where can we find you or the Solomon Islands?
I don't know the website I have.
Oh, fair enough.
Totally fine.
Search for the Solomon Islands.
Visit the Solomon Islands.
Right.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Actually,
no, it's
go to my website, because I have articles about the Solomon Islands.
Yeah,
everything-everywhere.com.
Because keep in mind that Gary, you can search Gary and travel, and you don't even have to know where his website.
Any destination.
And it will just show up. So search Gary Travel and Solomon Islands, and you'll be set.
Okay,
so,
I need to quickly. One of my best performing articles ever was about the Solomon Islands. I found a $5 million moon rock at the National Museum in the Solomon Islands.
What?
Do you really want to tell people about this?
Yes, my daughter would love to know about a moon rock.
So on the so the U.S. gave moon rocks to every country in the world, and in 1978 the Solomon Islands became independent, and they have a plaque that Jimmy Carter sent with a small, tiny bit of moon rock encased in acrylic, and it was sitting in an open, unlocked display case in the Solomon Islands. And I wrote an article about it because I had read about illegal trafficking of moon rocks. And someone from NASA actually read the article, an attorney, and they did not know where the Solomon Islands moon rock was. And since then, I've had people contact me and update me saying it's still in the display case. So
here's what I'm worried about is, does the average opportunist say, well, if I can get to the Solomon Islands for $699 and steal a moon rock...
But how do you fence it? That's the key. No, it really is, because I went through this intellectually as an exercise to think, okay, if I wanted to steal a $3 to $5 million moon rock, what do you do then? And I had nothing.
You put it in your fossil and mineral drawer that only people can look at but not touch, just like my daughter has a special drawer like that.
Jen, if I go to the Solomon Islands again, I will steal the moon rock for your daughter, and she can put it in her collection.
Thank you, Gary.
But as long as Gary's not arrested, let's go on to our next guest. Introduce yourself for our audience, please.
Hi, I'm Colleen Lannon. I'm the founder and editor of TravelMamas.com, which is a family travel blog.
Hi, Colleen. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having
me. Colleen also happens to be my former co-founder of KidsAndTrips.com.
I did not know that.
Yes, that's true.
Oh,
Jen and I are good friends.
Colleen, you recently had an amazing trip to Argentina.
Yes, I did.
Tell us about it. And if you have any steak tips, please let me know. I'm an avid carnivore.
So my family, we have, for the past couple of years, have tried to do... We live in Arizona. My family lives in Arizona. And I've got two kids and a husband. And my kids are 11 and 14. And for the past couple of years, we live in Arizona, so we try to get out of the heat in the summer. And so we have been... I want my kids to learn Spanish. I want to learn Spanish. I speak French, but we're trying to learn Spanish as well. And so last year, this past summer, we went to Argentina, which, by the way, is winter in Argentina. So we went from 110 degrees to 40 degrees our first day. That was a big swing in temperature our first day that we got there. The year before, we went to San Miguel de Allende, Mexico, for a month. And so I think we'll continue that tradition until the kids leave the house, and probably beyond. We'll keep on going for a month every summer to a Spanish-speaking country.
Chris, Gary, have you ever been to San Miguel de Allende?
I loved San Miguel de Allende. I was there 2 years ago.
I happen to know that Colleen would love to move her family there temporarily. Tell us more about the struggle of balancing kids' needs and wants with your needs and wants.
balancing my needs and well, you know, I think that whenever you're traveling with anybody, whether it's your kids or your partner or a friend, it's always a balance between what do I want to do and what does the other person want to do. I know for a fact that when I travel with one child as opposed to both kids, it's a lot easier because you want to go do this? Okay, fine, let's do that. Then I want to do this? Let's go do that. When we have all four of us, there's four different people who have four different things that they want to do. I don't think it's necessarily a big struggle between the ages. I don't think it's necessarily because my kids have very different things that they want to do than what I want to do. It's just the more people you add to the mix, the more difficult it is to make sure that everyone's happy in life, right? Whenever you do anything, the more people you add, the more opinions there are.
I will say the next time you're in San Miguel de Allende, if you can make it over to Guanajuato, Tim Leffel, our conference director, runs a great food tour in Guanajuato that he's no longer running it. He has people who are doing the tours on the ground. And you'll learn both about the Mexican independence movement, which started in Guanajuato, while you're eating street tacos. So, I mean, like, how can you top this?
Chris, aren't both of those places really, really great destinations for Spanish immersion and learning the Spanish language?
San Miguel de Allende is about 10% expats, and so a lot of people find it just more a comfortable city. Guanajuato is more of a Mexican city than San Miguel de Allende, but still a colorful city and a delicious city as well.
Yeah, we did a day tour to Guanajuato, which is really pretty. It's a very colorful city. They actually have to paint their houses a certain color. They have to get approval from the government what color they're going to paint their houses, and it's very beautiful. Same with San Miguel de Allende, actually, but their colors are more earth tones. So yeah, it's a gorgeous place. Both of them are gorgeous, and I love both of them.
I have to ask your opinion. Argentina, good beef or great beef?
Oh, my God. Great beef.
Great question.
Great beef. And for about $12, you get the biggest filet mignon you've ever had in your entire life. It was literally, there was one restaurant that we went to there. It's called Santos Manjares. We were there for 4 weeks. We went 5 times within 4 weeks because it was that good. And, you know, very cheap. Very, you know, everybody's very welcoming. I speak my really, really bad Spanish. They don't mind. They pretend like they understand me. It's very great.
Well, and they speak a little slower in Argentina, so that's one advantage versus Mexico. The Mexican accent can be a little more rapid, a little more difficult to understand.
Yeah, but, you know, Spanish is a little different in Argentina than it is in Mexico, which was a little confusing at first. The nice thing is that they will understand you nonetheless, even if I kept on speaking my Mexican Spanish is what I kept on doing. But for example, for a double L word, so if you have a word like pollo in Mexico, it's pollo in Argentina.
So it's got, I did not know that.
Yeah, it's a little bit of like a French influence. Instead of saying tú, which is normally the informal you in Spanish, it's vos in most of Latin America, in most of South America, which I was a little confused about when I first got there. But guess what? I just kept on speaking my Mexican Spanish, and they understood me just fine.
Excellent. Could you tell people where they can find you on the internet here? We're going to move along here.
I'm at travelmamas.com. That's travelmamas.com.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Hello. Please introduce yourself.
My name's Drea Coleman from Named to Dream.
And what do you do at Named to Dream?
So I'm a wellness blogger.
Okay.
And so what I do is I am a neuroscience and psychology student on the pre-med track, and I kind of use that to research things and incorporate that into my YouTube channel by researching it and understanding whether or not it is actually healthy. And if it's not, I do not input it into my own life. But if it is, I track it real time on my Instagram, and then I create the full version onto my YouTube.
Okay, this is very interesting.
Yes, awesome. You're a YouTuber.
Can you give us an example? Just a for example of something you've dealt with recently.
So I'm actually a very, very new YouTuber. My first video launches next week.
Okay, so but still, for example.
So, for example, what I have been really dealing with and really struggling with is I gave up sugar. I only eat 25 to 35 grams of sugar a day, and that includes honey, Splenda, aspartame, all of it. Anything that's sweet, I do not ingest.
I basically gave up all sugar.
Mm-hmm. Did you really, Gary?
With the exception of Diet Coke. which is probably the biggest problem I have.
Yeah.
But yeah, the results have been phenomenal, and I've been doing a lot of research into the problems with sugar and some of the research behind some of the really bad research that led to a lot of dietary recommendations in the United States. And you saw that as obesity has increased in the United States, it basically was an increase in sugar consumption.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Especially colas were a huge part of that, and processed sugars,
Yeah, so the reason I actually gave up anything that was added sweetness is because it's actually an addiction to the sweetness in our biological growth as humans, because sweet things are usually a great source of energy as in nature.
Yes.
And so I wanted to break my addiction so I don't crave it as much, because I am a sugar addict. I still struggle with it. But I wanted to create a lifestyle that I can actually sustain without the sugar, without the drops as well, because what we usually do is we just cut out sugar, but we still eat things like Splenda.
So how you're at a travel conference.
Yes.
So you're tying this in with travel.
Yes. So I do travel, and I do believe that travel is a huge part of wellness.
Okay.
So when I traveled to Thailand, that's actually how I helped get me over my anxiety and things like that.
Excellent. Now, I notice you have one star on your badge, so this is your first Teabex.
It is.
And is this your best Teabex ever?
Well, obviously.
Welcome to Teabex, Drea.
Thank you.
And tell people where they can find you on the internet.
Oh, but before we get to that.
Before we do that. Sorry.
You were in Thailand.
Yes.
Does the reduction of sugar include fruit?
No.
In Thailand, did you have any rambutan or dragon fruit or mangosteen?
I absolutely loved it, but I also was still eating a ton of sugar then.
Okay.
So I did not apply that rule when I was there. This was last year that I went to Thailand, and the sugar thing, I'm about 6 months into that.
So for the sake of assuming you go back now, what would you, because I'm totally on board with what you're saying. I've cut out a lot of sugar.
Yes.
And I try to, but it's really hard when you travel, and it's really hard when you travel domestically.
Yes.
I drove here, and when you stop at gas stations and fast food restaurants, there's so many carbs.
So, Gary, you're saying you didn't have the candied bacon that I brought over earlier?
You know, I bit into it, and then I realized
it was candied
after
bacon.
I first saw bacon, hooray,
right.
And then I tasted it, I'm like, bacon dipped in sugar.
Bacon dipped in sugar.
And for the most part, bacon
doesn't need
is
that.
God's gift to man.
Yeah, the best.
But so I'm just curious how, like, you know, because it risk is kind of hard traveling sometimes because you don't have a lot of choice, you know, in what you eat.
So I believe that when you're traveling, it really is about your mental health. And so I believe that if you want to have sugar, you should go ahead and try that sugar-coated bacon. It was delicious. But I'm not going to have two pieces, because I just wanted to try it. And so I can put that moderation in myself and allow myself the happiness that I can have that food gives me, but still kind of not overindulge and go and grab a handful like I want to.
I'm completely with that. I will stop at one pie or one cake.
Yeah. So, like, while I'm in Montana, I have been enjoying all the huckleberry stuff, and that means that I am consuming a little bit more sugar than I would at my home, but still, I didn't have those yummy pastries that were at the lunch break earlier today because that was a bit too much sugar for me.
Was there something that brought you to this? I mean, you look fit.
Thank you.
Was it just research, or was it something personal that, like, you didn't feel good?
So I have two reasons that I gave up sugar. So one, diabetes runs in my family. My mom was recently diagnosed with diabetes. That means that she's the last person in her family to be diagnosed with diabetes because everyone else has already been diagnosed. Two, I have ADHD, and what sugar and simple carbs give you is a spike of energy and then a high crash rate. So by putting a sustainable source of energy into my body, I'm able to avoid that crash and sustain my attention for a little bit longer without relying on as much drugs.
I also think I have ADHD. Oh, look at that shiny thing.
Why is ADHD so long?
My handle is named to dream, and I am on Instagram and pretty much every social media, but mainly Instagram right now, and I will launch my YouTube next week.
You have a website?
I do have a website. I have not fully posted anything yet, though. So, yeah, I'm very new. I think I'm the youngest person at this conference.
Really?
Yeah, I'm 21. I'm the only Z generation who blogs here.
Oh, well. Well, you're way ahead of where I was at the age of 21. So
thank you.
Thank you so much, Drea.
Thank you. Yeah.
Who's next?
Hi, my name is Sonia Hoyt.
Go ahead, hold the mic and introduce yourself. Right, we're coming
the
in.
Happy travel bug.
The happy travel bug?
The happy travel bug.
Tell us all about it.
Okay, well, when I was a child, my happiest memories are traveling with my mom and dad. And then I carried that love of it over to my children, who are now grown. I'm an empty nester, but I call myself a not-so-empty
nester. Wait, empty nester? You don't look old enough to have college kids.
Well, thank you very much.
No, she looks at least 15 years younger than me. What's going
She's
on
She's not
here?
Old enough to
I'm
drink.
Much older than that.
Thank you.
Holy moly.
And, yes, so I my children love to travel even though they're gone out of the nest. They have said to me they will travel with us until the day they die. But
Wonderful.
Probably I'll die first, so, yeah. But, yeah, so I just like to share my happy travels with the world.
So why travel? I mean, there's a lot of things that you can get into. You can get into sports, you can get into knitting, you can get
into
scrapbooking, whatever it is. Why travel?
My parents, I lived in Arkansas, they had a motorhome, and they decided to drive to Alaska from Arkansas. Yes.
Ooh, what part of Arkansas?
Little Rock area.
From Arkansas? Yes. Or were they just doing the A states, or is that no? I'm sorry.
Oh well, yeah, no. Well, we
no.
We
I was just asking if they were just doing the A states,
there,
you know, from Arkansas
Canada.
To Alaska. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was, like I said, in junior high, and I was actually pretty ticked off that I was missing the entire summer because we were leaving at the end of school and coming back literally like days before school started. I did. I literally hated them. I didn't want to talk to them.
Don't you hate parents when they just drag your ass out there and, you know, and when I said A states, Canada is actually an A state. It's Canada, eh? So, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Me being the angry teenager or, you know, preteen. And by the time we came back in August, I remember clearly standing in the motorhome in between my mom and dad up in the front and saying, let's just not go home. Let's keep going. We could do this forever. We could travel all over the whole United States.
I love it.
And
we've met people at this conference who do that, but that was not as
that's
common.
Wonderful.
Right.
When you and I were younger.
For sure. And my parents were much older, so they were already retired, and that's why they could do things like that. So it was me, a 15-year-old with a whole bunch of 50, 60-year-old people, you know. And I loved it. I loved every second of it. And that's what the travel bug bit me. And from that moment on, I wanted to explore every part of the world.
So I'm curious, and I love this story. I love that you discovered the travel bug so early, which is earlier than most people do. But yes. Tell me, from 15 to an adult.
Okay, well, I continued to travel.
How did you decide you were going to make travel
teacher,
part of your life?
And then when my son was born, I quit. And I just, with my husband, we took our kids everywhere. We've been to 29 countries as a family of four.
Wow.
And like I said, now they're gone. When my daughter left, my youngest went to college.
Nice.
I had been blogging because everybody had always said, I want to ask you questions about, like, where's your favorite place? And I thought, you know what? I'm going to write all this down. I love to take pictures, put it on a blog. But when my daughter went to college, I thought, people make a
nice
living out of this stuff. Like, why am I just giving all this information away for free? So I decided to make it a business. And shockingly, I'd been doing it for years, and I knew nothing. Like, I didn't know SEO. I didn't know so many things. Right. For sure.
But you're making a living now. Is that, I mean, you would consider that a pretty good living now.
Well, I just got back
That's
from
awesome.
Hawaii last month, and this month I came here. My next biggest trip, where am I going next? I'm going to Minnesota, and
that's very
know,
close
right?
to Gary.
I don't have any big giant trips.
That's pretty exotic.
But I'm like, no. I've been traveling. I went to North Dakota for 2 weeks in June, and I'm just kind of like, okay.
Did you enjoy T-Bex?
I had a great time at TBEX. Learned a lot, met a lot of people. The speed networking part was fabulous.
I hear there's a really good piece of software that enables that. Could we get you to tell us one more time where people can find you on the internet? And then we're going to move along here.
All right. My blog is The Happy Travel Bug, or it's happytravelbug.com. And I'm at Happy Hoyt, my last name, H-O-Y-T, on most social media.
Excellent. Thank you so
well,
much.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for joining us.
Of course. Nice to meet you guys.
You can find us on This Week in Travel.
Hey, thanks for being on. We
on
really
iTunes.
Appreciate it. Yeah, absolutely.
You can, but if they're listening to us, they probably already did.
Well, we're at TBEX, so
absolutely.
They might just be hanging out.
They might just be hanging out. Could you introduce yourself to our audience, please?
Hi, I'm Priya with Outside Suburbia.
Yeah.
Hi.
Yep.
It's
outside suburbia.
I am so far inside suburbia.
All right.
Where outside suburbia are you, Priya?
I am from Plano. It's a suburbs in Dallas, Texas. It's not a small suburb, but it is still a suburb of Dallas. And I always wanted to get out of the suburbs when it comes to weekends.
Okay.
And go explore, whether it's Dallas or weekend trips. Or we have DFW Airport, which is easy to get out of. So we were always traveling somewhere outside of our little suburb. So that's where...
And I'm hearing a Texas accent then, I gather, from...
I don't know. Do you?
I am not assuming you're originally from Dallas.
I am from India, from Chennai, India, but I've lived in Texas for 22 years now.
Okay.
So that Texas drawl hasn't kicked in yet, is that what you're saying?
I think howdy, how you all, maybe.
Nice. That was well done. I love that. I'm kind of curious. When you're talking about outside suburbia, are you talking about day trips outside of where you're going, or are you talking about getting on the plane?
Getting on the plane, because we're so driving anywhere outside of Texas, it takes you 5-6 hours to get outside
right.
of Texas.
It is a big state.
So it's we are so close to the airport that gets us outside, so most of the time it's international travel.
Nice.
And some day trips within, you know, like in Dallas and things like that.
Okay.
Tell us more about your website and where your next trip is going to.
Where I want to go next or where my next trip
Either
is.
Way, I'm
Both.
All about dream travel.
Both.
Okay.
Tell us where you're dreaming to go.
We actually, this year we won travel award to go to Sir Richard Branson's property in Morocco.
Wow.
Oh,
I've met
Island
Richard
or?
Branson.
No, to the one in Morocco, the tan lot.
All right.
But he's wonderfully positive. I've met him in person.
Oh, you have?
I heard only virgins can go there. No, I'm sorry. I totally got that wrong. Never mind.
I am one, so I can go. But we travel as a family. I have two kids, one who is 16 years old. The other one is 21. And busy lives, you know, they go to college, one plays baseball, so we're trying to find time that works so all of us can go together.
So you do a lot of spring break travel then?
We do. Spring break, we've been to Scottsdale to watch the baseball games.
Baseball, sure.
What team?
Texas, of course, Rangers.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, there's a lot of teams in Scottsdale, Phoenix, and Mesa.
Yeah. My son will watch anything. As long as there's a ball and bat involved, he'll watch anything.
Excellent. We're getting the wrap-up signal here before we get you
to
wrap up.
The event is ending, so I'm so sorry we have to wrap up. The buses have already left.
Can we? Oh, really?
Yes.
We're stranded here now.
Yes.
Could we get you to tell us where we could find you on the internet?
You can find me on outsidesuburbia.com. That's the website. And you can also find me on Instagram.
Thank you so much, and
outside
I hope
suburbia.
You had a good
outside suburbia.
I hope you had a good TBEX experience.
Yes, I did. This is my first time, and I loved it.
Excellent,
wonderful.
That's wonderful.
And I think we're actually going to our last guest here. Then,
okay, then. All right. You know, that's actually a great thing because the idea of basing yourself somewhere where you can actually have ready access to anywhere in the world or to just take a weekend somewhere is always wonderful.
Yes.
Well, and we're welcoming back somebody here that we've had on the show before who has, I think, the, you know, maybe the third place number of stars for a number of TBEXs attended.
Kerwin's in the house. Yes, yeah, Kerwin,
why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
This is Kerwin McKenzie. I have a few blogs, Unfamiliar Destinations, FastRider.com, CruisingAuto.com, ex-airline employee. I've been to about 124 countries, flown 179 airlines, and I love you guys.
Yay, we love you too, Kerwin.
I actually did not know about the ex-airline employee.
Oh,
what
yeah.
was your back? I apologize. I'm coming late to the party.
Three different airlines.
Yeah, wow.
I started with Delta. Then I went to American Transair, which is out of business. And then I went to Continental, which is out of business, and which is now United.
So we should never fly anything that you've been involved with, is what you're saying.
Delta is still flying, so that's good.
Oh, okay, but just barely.
Well, Continental is part of United. Not that they went out of business so much as like every other airline in the U.S. merged.
Yeah, that's true. That's
no, definitely. True. So I have to ask, somebody who has this experience and background, what kind of passenger do you hate the most?
So you don't even know what his job was. His last job was
who fielded
the customer complaints.
You had a problem. Okay, what kind of customer did you hate the most?
See, I love them all because I'm...
Which is why he
Kerwin
had the job.
Kerwin is so nice.
Exactly. Right?
So positive.
Because I'm the guy, like, if you had...
Oh, my God, I think I'm going to cry.
Yeah, but if you had an issue, I'm the guy. I'm the guy who solves all your issues. So I had to love you, right?
Although there may have been a few people at the airline who he wasn't too fond of who decided to launch that website. But when Kerwin told them it wasn't ready, and it did what?
It crashed.
Kerwin, have you ever...
And crashed is a word we try not to use in the airline business.
That's right, yeah. That's right. I try to tell them, but, you know, it's corporate, so you have to be nice to the boss. I'm like, it's not going to work. It crashed, like, within 24 hours.
Now, this is a little piece of insider knowledge about newspapers, is that when they lay out pages where the ads are going to be, and you decide where the stories are going to be, they used to put a stamp on the page that said... There's an airline ad on this page.
Don't
Do not put,
a put a
any airline
story,
yeah. crashes on this page.
Yeah, it's weird. Well, so in social media today, the same respect is there. So if there's a crash or something, they pull all the social media ads.
Yeah.
So you don't see anything about airlines for like 24, 48 hours.
Kerwin, you know I love you, and you are the person that I most look forward to seeing at TBEX. No offense, Chris and Gary. Yeah. At all.
Chop liver.
Or Spud now. But Spud has the least number of stars of all of us.
Kerwin, fell off, okay?
Have you ever thought about being a travel blogger life coach?
I have been looking into it.
Meaning someone who is encouraging to other travel bloggers personal...
Kerwin and I share the trait of being very positive and really wanting to move people's dreams forward.
Okay. Yeah.
Both of us are very that way.
So long as there's no Peloton... bicycling thing. I'm okay with that.
Thank you, Spud.
Yeah.
No, but people keep coming up and telling me to be a life coach, and I can't help but thinking how positive you are and how every time people talk to you, you move their life or their project forward.
You know what, Jen? I think I'm gonna go look into it.
Good work.
Yeah, yeah. You're very right about that.
I have found my experiences that you do what Jen tells you to do.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, no, I mean, she's... Every time I think I've got my handle on something and she says, oh, no, you need to do this. And it comes out 10 times better when Jen tells me.
Thank you.
And I hate to do this to Kerwin, but we literally have gone half an hour longer than the party.
Oh, that's okay.
And Gary, could I get Gary back on
Gary,
the microphone?
Gary, are you ever coming back?
we're going to try and end this with the four
Kerwin,
that we started.
Kerwin, where can
this.
We find you online?
Okay. Loyalty Travels is the Instagram account or Twitter, and if you go to Unfamiliar Destinations or PassRider.com or CruisingAuto.com, you can find me.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much, Kerwin.
Gary, so much, guys. Official unofficial ambassador of TBEX.
Apparently.
And besides me and you, I think Kerwin has the most stars on his badge for the most number of TBEXs, and I still want to call him the new guy.
I've got 17.
Yeah.
Well, so what you may not know is the first four times I met Kerwin, I introduced myself.
As Kerwin?
No, it's like, oh, Kerwin. It's like I haven't, like I hadn't met him. It really took me the longest time to remember Kerwin, and we have joked about it since, and he's fortunately good-natured. Well, I have joked about it since. apparently Kerwin is still taking it personally, but I did want to get Gary back on the microphone here as
welcome
we
back,
wrap
Gary.
This up. The 10th anniversary episode of
Yeah, I think
this
we should mention
travel.
That. This
I think
is...
we should all hold hands.
Okay, that's too much for me, Jen. But
is there a kumbaya? You know, basically,
so,
you know.
So it was the 2009 T-Bex where Chris and Jen and I, we were, I don't know if you remember, it was a bar somewhere in Chicago. We were sitting outside.
In Chicago,
it couldn't
yes.
have been me because I'm never yeah. in a bar.
No, Spud is a teetotaler. But you've been on the show as a guest so many times.
So many times.
Probably more than anyone else. So it's been 10 years that we've been doing this. And that's probably way too long for anyone.
Yeah, so thank you all for listening.
Thank you.
We're going to move on to other projects.
And is there a point in pointing out that not only is it Friday the 13th, but there's a full moon?
Oh, it's so lucky. But
I would ask here, but as we wrap this up, I would like to go around the table, and since we have been to a number of T-Bexes, your favorite or weirdest T-Bex moment and your favorite This Week in Travel moment here in the last 10 years.
Okay, I want to start.
All right, Jen.
Okay, my favorite T-Bex was Keystone. It was absolutely magical for me. The ending final party where we saw Deb and Dave on video out in what felt like
on an Expedia ad, which at the time seemed like impossible.
Thank you, Chris.
That a blogger would be on an Expedia ad.
Yes, but the whole party felt like a cowboy wedding. It was amazing. And the Deb and Dave video just brought me to tears. Keystone was my favorite T-Bex thus far. And my favorite This Week in Travel moment was actually, oh, no offense to Gary, I don't think he was there, where we were in San Francisco and we were doing a live show from the, was it the Ritz-Carlton, Chris?
I think
Ritz-Carlton Four Seasons.
Four Seasons.
We were in the Four Seasons downtown in San Francisco. We were with Don George, amongst many other San Francisco Bay Area travel writers.
Right.
And it was just a pleasure. We ordered drinks and food, and we chatted about travel and travel writing, and it was just so wonderful.
Well, how about that show we did where Gary called in from the salt mines in Poland?
Oh, I love that one.
Wasn't that one of the best?
And weren't we? Didn't we mess up the recording when he was 400 feet underground?
Oh, right. That's the one I didn't press record.
The greatest moment in podcasting history. Chris screws up. I could have set a world record or something from the deepest podcast. And surprisingly good internet connection from a mile underground.
Actually, for a salt mine, I think we'd have to say that.
It was a video one, too.
Yes, that was excellent.
It was video.
The Keystone party you're talking about is probably the best T-Bex party ever. Best T-Bex, I think, was Dublin for me.
Dublin was good.
I
came home with a son-in-law from that one, so that was quite memorable.
You grew a...
My daughter came with me and with her boyfriend and came home with her fiancé.
Oh, I love that.
Wow.
I'm so sad I wasn't there.
Okay, so Gary, go back to your story, because
this is
getting too maudlin.
Gary, what was your favorite T-Bex?
Well, you said Dublin.
Okay.
Are you not?
And it really had to do with the fact that the event was at the hotel I was staying at, so I didn't have to go anywhere. I could drink to my heart's content, and I just met a lot of people, and we hung out, and, you know, it's not a T-Bex thing. It's an any conference thing. Any conference you go to, it's the people you meet and the experiences you have. Like, I, with the exception of the Chris's conversation with the park superintendent of Yellowstone, I didn't attend a single event or a single session at this one.
Well, now I feel honored.
Well,
no, you weren't there for me.
I walked by the door and I saw you standing there with the guy in the national park gear, and I was like, oh, yeah, I wanted to see this. but, yeah, and as far as my favorite moment on This Week in Travel, it was when Jen picked life as
her
pick of the week.
Gary, you can't let that go.
No, I cannot. This will haunt you forever to your dying day. I will make an effort to put it on your tombstone. Here lies Jen Leo. She picked life.
living life.
Well, we're not talking about Leif Pedersen.
Okay.
No.
It was like she didn't do her homework and didn't have a pick of the week, and she was just like flustered, like, Leif.
Okay. Let's not.
As far as T-Bex goes, actually, one of the reasons I also love Keystone is because Chris and I and a couple other brilliant folks, and I don't mean me, I mean brilliant folks, decided to do this wonderful video about
the trials
that miners back in the 1800s faced
as they were
going up
that.
The train. And there was this wonderful, wonderful riffing that was like worthy.
I've not seen this.
I remember this.
It's a wonderful video. And it's worthy of the whole Christopher Guest thing. It's like Waiting for Guffman or something like that.
Can we post this? Yeah. The audio at least?
I have no idea where this is.
No, I can get you the link. But we did this. And, of course, Chris is like, well, you know, grapes were
making up history on the fly
for the miners because they had peels and you could actually wash off and get the grapes off it. And it was a brilliant, brilliant moment where everybody in the moment just did an absolutely brilliant job at recreating history in a totally, totally fallacious, totally wrong way. It was awesome. And that was our moment because we were trying to compete against everybody else while we were driving up toward whatever
it was, a scavenger
we were
hunt.
Driving up toward.
Yeah.
And I still have that video somewhere. I think we need to put that into the show notes.
I like it.
And favorite T-Bex moment.
That is my favorite T-Bex
moment. All right. And favorite This Week in Travel moment then.
Favorite This Week in Travel is every time I get to be on with you guys.
Oh,
I
swear to God.
I think that's like life. That's really, that's up there with that.
Do you remember? And say, we want you on. I'm like, you know, it makes my heart melt because I'm just so honored to be on this show.
I'm going
to
go the first live party we did in Vancouver, the 2-hour long T-Bex.
Is that when I got drunk on Diet Coke and rum?
Yeah. That would be the one. Yeah. That would be the one.
The first time.
That was. Yeah. I was drinking Diet Coke.
Chris, speaking of Leif, which T-Bex did we do a live show on stage where Leif Pedersen brought us the
beer?
Toronto. And
Spud was on
that. That was Toronto. And actually, that was a big part of that.
That was the closing night keto.
Basically, I wanted to make sure the PRSA had one time, I, in total jest, said, I'm going to do your panel, but there need to be drinks. And they took it really seriously, and they brought us drinks and the whole bit. And so when we did the Toronto thing, I said, you know, we've got all these beers that we've been given, all these various beers that were from
Toronto-centric
places.
I'd forgotten that.
And despite the fact that we weren't supposed to be doing this, we were told literally
this is
illegal to do this.
You ask forgiveness, not permission.
Exactly. Leif Pedersen basically brought out all these beers.
Three beers and a Diet Coke. Yeah.
He ran up from
show.
The audience.
Yeah. No, it was great.
No, he came from the wings, as I recall.
Yeah, no, he came from the wings.
Leif.
And he brought us all this stuff. And I'll tell you, quite honestly, and I put this into my own podcast, is when you drink, it's just a better podcast. It really is. It just, you know.
Well, then this should be the best podcast in the world.
I would say that was my favorite This Week in Travel moment was the party. I would have to say in the 10 years of T-Bex, I think there's been only one time that someone has moderated a panel at T-Bex blindfolded, and that was me at the Vancouver event.
Well done, Chris.
And that still stands up because Kim Manns had the craziest idea that...
She was going to be naked? Or
no, she was going to do a panel where they were going to not decide ahead of time what the panel was going to be about.
They
had people put suggestions in a box,
boy.
And people decided we're going to do an SEO panel with no preparation. And she panicked at the last moment and asked me to moderate it. And I said that the level of difficulty was not high enough, so I did it blindfolded.
Now, the joke,
of course, was when I got to the point of asking for questions from the audience and started pointing at people with the blindfold on and not being able to see anybody. And it was really all in preparation for that joke.
I actually would remember that, except I was probably drunk.
That's possible. That is possible. With that,
I think it's time to wrap things up because we're the last people here at the depot.
And we got almost no food in the process.
That is correct. So until next time, make sure to get outside and do make the effort to get to Billings, Montana, because it is an absolutely wonderful place.
Beautiful. Hashtag visit Billings.
It's awesome.